This afternoon, I am speaking with Lincoln Tripp, trying to find out as much as I can about him, his work, his family here in Westport, and their time before Westport. Lincoln served Westport magnificently as chairman of its bicentennial committee. He is now and has been for some time president of the Westport Historical Society. He lives in an early house at the head of Westport on a rise facing the east branch of the Westport River. One of his pet projects is the restoration of the Bell School, which had been used for many things after it was a schoolhouse. I'll just start. We go back and forth in time with the questions. They're not from today on or anything. It's just informal. And so, how long have you been president of the Historical Society?
This will be my third year.
Third year. And how long a member?
Since the beginning of the society, I was a charter member.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that would be 11 years.
11 years. I was a charter member, too. You might not have known it, but I, when it was formed, Al East wrote to, we were in New York and wrote to us and said, since you were so interested and did so much in that exhibition, art exhibition, mm-hmm. toward the history, would you like to be a charter member? And we wrote back and said, yes. Mm-hmm. So that's that. What was the most difficult thing about, is it interesting to you to be president? Is it just a headache, or feels if you have good officers and it's really exciting?
Well, you're asking me several questions, Mary.
I am.
First of all, is it interesting to be president of the Historical Society? Yes, I think it's very interesting. I'm really very enthused about having the opportunity to be president. I really have a great love for Westport, and I can't think of any other place where I would rather be permanently than Westport. And so therefore, I think being president of the Historical Society is kind of it just goes along with my general feeling toward the town.
Mm-hmm.
Now you asked me if I have good offices. Yes, I feel that we have a very competent group of offices, people who are seriously interested in the aims of the society. And they're persons who are, for the most part, very easy to work with and very willing to work.
Yes, and since you've been president, it's continued to grow constantly. Each year I look at the little list of members, and it increases. How many members do you have? We have?
We have approximately 350 members. This would include people and family memberships,
mm-hmm.
and couples who are members, and so on. And our mailing list is something around 240 at
mm-hmm.
the present time.
Mm-hmm.
Both of which I consider good statistics.
Yeah. Well, that's wonderful, because when you started, what was your membership early on when the first few years of the historical
society? Well, I wasn't too active in the first few years of society, but I think of approximately 6 years or so ago, they had a membership drive, which I won't say it doubled the membership rolls, but it must have increased membership by 25% or more.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those members have not continued, however, but we gained steadily
mm-hmm.
each year, which
mm-hmm.
I think is good, a good sign. I'd rather gain steadily a few members than add a large number and have them fall by the wayside within a couple of years.
Yes. I would too. What do you do? I know some of the answers to some
sure.
of the questions I'm asking you, but what is your present work?
Well, I'm a schoolmaster. I've taught for about 19 years now, and I'm teaching in Fairhaven presently, sixth grade, and working with all subjects. Almost a self-contained classroom situation.
You're very progressive. That is progressive.
You think that is progressive?
Yes, I think going back to the one-room schoolhouse is about the most progressive thing we could do.
Yeah. I think, I really think it's the ideal type of education, and I feel that I prefer this much to much more than departmentalization.
Well, tell me about your, where were you born?
Well, I was born in St. Luke's Hospital in New Bedford, but came to Westport as soon as they could.
They could get you out of the hospital.
Right. Yes.
And did you come to the same house you live in now?
No, I lived in a house on Old County Road, which is now occupied by the Hawes family.
Mm-hmm.
That was the home of my grandparents.
I want to interject that Lincoln now lives on Drift Road. I guess I say that
right,
later.
Right, I did say that in the beginning. This was a house that was owned by Nancy Paris, who was wife of a former minister of Pacific Union Church back in the, well, I guess at the inception of Pacific Union Church. He was there, one of the first clergymen, and the house later went into the Batello family, and then my grandparents acquired.
Now, what relationship? Nancy was a doctor too, wasn't she? Or was
her
he
husband,
a,
I believe. Was,
her husband was a doctor.
Yes,
I thought there was
a
doctor.
Medical doctor. And
medical
a
doctor.
Also.
Uh-huh.
And I think the house, many years before that, had been owned by Peleg Cornell,
mm-hmm.
who was a sea captain.
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating. Really interesting. We must have, with this, I think with your report, a little map, just a little drawing that shows you moving here and there and so on, and the Paris is in the dark, you know, place and so on, and the head. Where did you go to school?
I, of course,
elementary,
had all my elementary school here in town, went to the head school
mm-hmm.
on Reed Road, and at that time there were combination grades, two grades in a classroom. And,
was there one teacher with it, or two? Two.
There was one teacher, except for the, I believe, the year that I was in the first grade. We did have two teachers in the classroom. That was in 1938, after the hurricane.
Mm-hmm.
And Hicks Bridge, of course, had washed out
mm-hmm.
During the storm. And therefore, bus routes had to be changed, and children were transferred to the head school, and
mm-hmm.
I think because of the large number of youngsters in the school at that time, they had to have an extra teacher.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember too much about this. I never remember that it ever bothered me or
no.
Seemed confusing or anything to have two teachers in the same room.
No. No, it's... well, I do remember quite a few things about my first grade, but not in much detail, I must say.
I do remember my first grade teacher, Mrs. Aborn. She really was a very tiny woman
mm-hmm.
and very affectionate. In
mm-hmm.
fact, she picked everyone up, particularly all the little boys, and smothered them with kisses, you know. And,
yeah.
I don't know whether I enjoyed that too much at that stage of my life, but it was kind of interesting. She was a very nice person and died not too long ago.
Yes. And then after elementary school, high school?
Well, I went to what is now the Milton Earl School.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was the last class to, mine was the last class to graduate from the old high school.
It was?
I believe so.
And after that, they moved up to the new high
the
school.
New building, yes.
Mm-hmm. 1950 was the last class. Who was principal?
Harold Wood.
Harold Wood was. I taped Harold the other day. I had a very nice session with him. He went on to be superintendent, didn't
yes,
he? Then, so you moved along with him.
Mm-hmm, just about.
Mm-hmm. What did you... Then you went on to college after that. What did you like in high school? What were your interests? Let's say back in elementary school, what kinds of things were you interested in?
Well, I was always a great reader, and I was interested in dramatics. And in high school, was in both class plays, and I was interested also in writing newspaper work. I worked in for the school paper and
mm-hmm.
so forth. And I really think my interests are very verbal, actually, and,
mm-hmm.
and continue to be so.
Yes. At that time, when you were in high school, you hadn't yet decided on teaching as a career, I don't know.
No, not really.
No.
I really hadn't decided on that until I was probably in my junior year of college, although I did go to a teacher's college, of course, as a freshman.
Where'd you go to college?
I went to Bridgewater State College.
And in about your junior year, you really decided you liked teaching.
Right, I think so. I had majored in English, but for a number of reasons, decided to work with elementary children.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I like the variety of subject matter, and I think that sometimes you get too stifled if you limit yourself to one subject.
Mm-hmm.
I've sort of limited myself to one grade level, but still it's an interesting
yes.
Age
so
group.
A very interesting and very important age group you're working with. I can remember when Mike was beginning to work on his doctorate. He had majored in English he got his master's in English.
Yes.
And he went to his committee more or less, and they said, look, English teachers are a dime a dozen. Don't. This was in 1938, I guess, or something. Don't get another degree in that. Do something else. Well, Mike didn't want to get another degree in English, and he wanted to be more exploratory, so he created his own degree in an interdisciplinary kind of thing, which is exactly what you're really doing. Psychology and sociology and anthropology and history and all. I mean, he had advisors in all these areas, and so that what you were doing and what he was doing are very much related. Growing up was, for most people, painful, also pleasurable.
Mm-hmm.
What were some of the fun things you did, except for reading?
Mm-hmm. Well,
were you athletic at all, or not inclined to be athletic?
I was not athletic. No, I'm afraid not. I was the
you were theater.
Proverbial little fat boy who couldn't run and couldn't, nobody wanted me on their team because of that.
Yes.
But that really didn't bother me too much because I did have a lot of other interests. I was interested in historical things back when I was a youngster of 10 or 11 because one of my little hobbies was a collection of what I call my quote, antiques, unquote.
Even at
and
that age?
At that age, yes. And I can remember of exhibiting these at Grange fairs and so on. And,
now, what did they comprise?
Well,
what were some of the kinds of things you had?
I had some very large, old-fashioned wooden clothespins. I had a couple of really old skates, one with a little acorn finial on the up curve of the end of the skate.
Can we chew and talk at the same time?
So,
we'll try.
Yes. And I had a little black snake whip, which I had traded something for at an auction that I attended. I had a neighbor, a young fellow my age, who attended the same auction, and I can't recall just what it was that I traded
mm-hmm.
for the black snake whip, but I felt that I should have that for my collection. I also had a baleen busk, which was part of the collection. I think I paid 15 cents for that somewhere along the line at an auction, and a powder flask, also which I paid 15 cents for.
Nice powder horn, like the one up there on the mantel?
It was a copper flask with embossing
mm-hmm,
and so
mm-hmm.
on.
And isn't that amazing that you at that age would have that interest?
Well, I think it was an interest that my mother particularly had, and I'm
mm-hmm.
sure she helped instill this in me.
Yes.
And I was also interested in whaling at that time, and I have some very, almost not priceless books, but very valuable books that I acquired at that time that have to do with whaling.
At 11 years
yeah,
old?
Yeah, right.
That's amazing.
The Yankee Whaler.
Mm-hmm.
And Whaling Masters, which is indeed very hard to find,
yes.
Published by the Old Dartmouth Historical Society. So really, Those
You've always been a scholar.
Yeah, I would say so. Those were probably some of my most intense interests. And of course,
in college, what did you do?
Well, I, believe it or not, played in the college orchestra. I did play violin as a junior high and high school student. Not very well. And so when I got to college, I was seated in the back row, so no one could see when I was bowing down, when I should have been bowing up. But it was fun, and I really enjoyed it.
I love that.
What?
Bowing down when you should have been bowing up.
That's right. But at any rate, I think I kept more of an interest at home when I was going to college, because I would come home most weekends, and I was active in church and
your church was the
Pacific Union Congregational
mm-hmm.
Church,
mm-hmm. which and is right across around the corner from you.
That is true.
Right.
And I enjoyed singing in the choir. In fact, I continue that interest today, mm-hmm. and I really, really enjoy music quite a bit. In fact, I think it was in college that I developed quite a deep interest in classical music,
mm-hmm.
which continues, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't involved in too many extracurricular activities in college, as I recall. I guess that's because of my home.
You had so many hobbies and so many interests that of your own.
Mm-hmm.
You might be in a word called a kind of a loner.
Mm-hmm.
Might you be?
Well.
But some of these, like orchestra, playing in an orchestra, isn't it? You don't play alone in it.
Right, no.
And dramatics? How did you follow that into college
not
at all?
Not really, no. I didn't happen to follow that into college. But, I think, I don't know whether loner is the correct term, because I enjoy people and enjoy working with people. But I find that I can sometimes get an awful lot done by myself, and prefer sometimes to be, you know,
mm-hmm.
in solitude.
Mm-hmm.
But where I work with people all day long, I think this is just natural.
Mm-hmm. I think everyone who works, who teaches, needs to retreat.
Definitely.
What I'd like to get at is some of the differences, just simple little differences between your home life as a child and your home life as a grown-up in the same house. Let's talk about roads and water and electricity and lighting and clothing and so on.
Well,
and money and food.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Of course,
start anywhere you wish.
I was, I guess, what you'd call a depression baby. So my parents were very much impressed with the necessity to be careful of things.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, my father was in a business, in the insurance business, which was inclined to be rather steady, despite the economics of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And so that we really never were in a situation where we were without, or really in an impoverished type of situation. But I do remember that there were times when, I felt that I needed a new suit of clothes, and I just had to make do with something that
mm-hmm.
wasn't quite what I thought it should be. Some of this was due to the fact that I was so overweight, it was awfully difficult to get clothing for me,
mm-hmm.
and things would have needed to be made special for
yes,
me.
Yes, and that would be terribly
yeah.
expensive.
Right, so actually I got along. I don't think it left any indelible
no.
scars. Or
all right, now about food, for instance, we're approaching Thanksgiving. What would you have for Thanksgiving dinner?
We have always had turkey for Thanksgiving, as long as I can recall,
mm-hmm.
and with all the fixings of mashed
mm-hmm.
potato and white turnips, Mecklenburg turnips,
mm-hmm.
never yellow turnips.
Mm-hmm.
Where
did you do your shopping for your food?
I think my mother probably all listed are shopping in New Bedford, at a large chain of stores and so on. And we were quite New Bedford oriented.
And now, in this house that you went back to from the hospital, did you have plumbing?
No. Now, of course, I don't remember too much about life there because...
if you were a baby,
I
you wouldn't...
I left when I was 5 years old, I believe. But there was no indoor plumbing. Well, I'm sorry, I should correct that. Yes, there was one cold water tap downstairs. And there was a large cistern.
So you had pipes and
There was a large cistern in the house so that rainwater could be used. And that was used for laundry purposes.
The cistern was in the house. Well,
cistern was in the house underneath a underneath an L, actually underneath the kitchen, I believe. And of course, there were not inside toilets at that time. The privy was attached to the barn. And about as I
which water did you drink?
Pardon?
Which water did you drink?
Well, we drank the well water, the tap water. However, I believe that my grandmother didn't like that particular water, and for years would send across the street to Mrs. Allen's to get water for drinking purposes. But we did, my mother and dad didn't do that. We used
You used your own water. Well, let's think, I mean, we've talked about a few things. What was the road like? Same as it is now?
No, it was narrower than it is now, but it was blacktopped, and not much of a change there.
There's not been much of a change. And the stores at the head?
Well, there was... the grocery store, which was run by Louis Correa, presently owned by Al Grundy. And then there was Miss Stacy's across the street. Miss Stacy's was located in what is now the Yankee Stripper. And hers was a little candy and ice cream store, which I felt was actually a great privilege to visit. Because I like Miss Stacy, she was kind of an interesting old lady. Once in a while, I'd be visiting my grand. This was after I moved to the home on Drift Road.
Yes.
I'd be visiting my grandmother, and she would say, "Well, would you like to go down to Miss Stacy's to get an Eskimo pie?" Because it was a big treat.
Yes.
And I like Miss Stacy's also because in the back of her store was an antique shop.
Oh.
Run by a Mr. Montel. And so on very rare occasions, Miss Stacy would let me go back into the shop and look around. I never remember seeing anyone else in there buying anything in the line of antiques, but it was...
Well, she liked antiques and so did you, so
that's
you had a good time. How much of a collection do you have? Do you collect have a lot? I know you had those perfectly beautiful prints that we had that in the... exhibition, the bicentennial exhibition with which you were chairman, and we had you exhibited your marvelous whaling things, some of them anyhow.
Well, very few of those that were on display were my whaling things, Mary.
They weren't?
They were mainly from other persons.
Uh-huh.
However, I do collect paintings, and one of the unfortunate things is that I file most of my things rather than display them because we just don't have room to display them. But sometime, hopefully, I will have more display space. I do have a collection of whaling books, and I've started collecting mulberry, mulberry ironstone.
Yes.
And do have quite a number of pieces of that. And then, more recently, I've started collecting cup plates. I think they're very interesting.
They're fascinating.
They represent such a variety of materials and styles and designs and so on. And they're kind of convenient for me to store because they're so small.
Yes.
And then, of course, I have quite a number of articles and items which pertain to Westport, which I collected over the years. and postcards too. That's something that I've really recently gotten into, and I collected Westport cards and also cards from New Bedford and
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. and Whalen cards.
Mm-hmm.
That's about it.
Yeah. You bought that wonderful collection of cards this summer, I remember.
Yes.
Have you enjoyed it?
Oh, yes. I still haven't mounted them the way I would like to have them
mm-hmm.
mounted, but I'll eventually get around to
that. You know, collectors are terrible. They get so much stuff that they never have time to do what with it what they originally planned.
Well, this is true. This is true. And I feel that someday somebody or some institution will have some rather interesting things that I've put away. And this is sort of my intention, I think. I hope that I will have several things for the Historical Society and so on.
Although you don't go back very far, and although you're not very old, what kinds of things did you have? The same kinds of things for breakfast as we did, and as we do now, as you do now?
Well, I think as far as at my home, we've always had rather simple breakfasts. In fact, I think I eat far more simply now than I did when I was a youngster. We would have eggs, scrambled eggs, or boiled eggs and
mm-hmm.
bacon and so
mm-hmm.
on. But I remember breakfasts at my grandmother's quite vividly, because that was a big treat to go over there and eat on a morning. Because my grandfather worked at night, and he would be coming home, possibly around 7 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I were there at that time, I could have Johnny cakes and sausage and pancakes. And that was a time when I could eat a wrap.
Really?
Pancakes,
have a huge wrap. Yeah.
And on Sunday mornings, once in a while, my grandmother would have steak and beans. And,
mm-hmm.
I'm not too clear on remembering whether she had pie. I think sometimes she might have had apple pie for breakfast.
Well, what year was this when you were doing this?
Well, this would be back in 1944 or 45, something of that
mm-hmm.
nature.
Yes.
High
school. Uh-huh. Well, she might have easily had pie. I can remember when Mike speaks about. He went to college at Amherst, and so that was not too far west in Massachusetts, and they always had pie for breakfast when he was in college there. It was just part of the picture to have a big breakfast. Then you had to race off to go to chapel. I guess it's your grandmother. How long has your family been in Westport?
Well, the progenitor of the Tripp family was John Tripp, who came from England, Northumberland, I believe, back in 1630, came to Newport.
Mm-hmm.
And I am about the 10th generation of Tripps.
In this area?
In this area, descended from John Tripp.
Mm-hmm. When did he come, did you
in
say?
In 1630.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
To Newport. And where did they go from Newport?
Well, I really have done very, very little research.
You haven't been a genealogist?
No, I haven't. That's another interest of mine, which is kind of just coming to light, I think. However, I believe that shortly after coming to Newport, John or his son Joseph, or possibly the both of them, came to what was Old Dartmouth,
mm-hmm.
and that probably was somewhere in Westport here.
Mm-hmm.
And I am descended. There are two main lines of Tripps in the country. One, the line that stems from Joseph, the son of John,
mm-hmm.
and then the other from James, John's son.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm descended from Joseph.
Joseph. Now, when you say in the country, do you mean in this area, or are there Tripps off, a whole batch of Tripps off someplace else? Because if you look in the telephone directory, there are a great many Tripps here.
I would say that probably all Tripps in the country are descended from John and his two sons.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, I'm just not familiar
you
with
don't
the other
know
area
enough
there.
About what did John do? You don't know what his
John own? Was a carpenter. I
carpenter.
Believe.
Mm-hmm.
But I, as I said, I just haven't taken the time to research.
Mm-hmm. That's too bad.
I think
you'll have fun when you do.
This is something I think that will come when we have a little more time. But this is also something that is very time-consuming.
Yes, it is. You know who would be helpful? Bonnie Seeley's mother's a genealogist, and I was interested in looking up Mike's great-grandfather's story, and I spoke to Bonnie about it, and she just spoke to her mother, and she's a member of the Genealogical Society in Boston,
mm-hmm.
which has the records of all the people in this area,
right.
and so on, and she gave me a lot of valuable information. And so she might get, I mean, you might speak
mm-hmm.
to Bonnie sometime.
Right.
Bonnie was one of the, the most valuable member of our Bicentennial Exhibition Committee, of which I was a member too. And of which Lincoln was the head of the whole thing.
I really shouldn't neglect my other ancestors, Mary. On my maternal side, I am descended from some Irish immigrants and also from French Canadian immigrants, and also there we really haven't followed this through, but we believe that. We are descended from John Rogers, who was a Mayflower passenger.
Mm-hmm.
This would be on my mother's side.
Mm-hmm.
But
and he was, I can't remember whether John Rogers came from where.
He came from England to Plymouth. And
mm-hmm.
But as I say, I haven't really,
yes.
haven't really looked into this facet.
No, he wasn't an Irishman who came
from
to England. No,
mm-hmm.
I thought the trips were almost the trip, but this is what was your mother's maiden name?
My mother's maiden name was Lambert.
Lambert. Mm-hmm. And it was the Lambert who came over on the Mayflower?
No, way back.
She
has, this would have been her maternal grandmother's name, Rogers.
Rogers. Oh,
yes.
You said that before.
Yes.
But I'm always thinking ahead, so I don't. I mean, repetition does no harm on the tapes because they're transcribed, and it also doesn't do any harm when people are listening because things are driven home
sure.
when they're repeated. And you haven't worked on any of this. Is anyone in the family?
Not.
Genealogically speaking.
Not really recently, but there are printed genealogies of the family, of both lines, both James's line and Joseph's line,
mm-hmm.
so that I can, actually it's very simple because my father is listed in the genealogy, so it really isn't too much.
Would you go to New Bedford or would
yes,
you go
would,
to Boston? You
I
could
go
to
New
Bedford.
Bedford.
Mm-hmm.
And have access to those. I don't believe the fall of the library. Well, yes, they have the genealogy for James Tripp's descendants.
They do?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So that would be a very simple matter for you to do. And that's why when you say you don't, it's so easy you don't need to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's probably true.
Yes. Well, I don't know whether, what questions haven't I asked you that I might have? I know you were marvelous, speaking of acting, your role as Benjamin Franklin in the Bicentennial was, you were a marvelous actor then.
Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't do much but pantomime, I guess, or
yes.
something at that in that particular situation. But no, this is something that I have sort of thought about doing when I have more time, whenever that will be.
Yes.
I mean, this is one of my problems is just finding enough time to do all the things that I'm interested in.
I know.
And but I think I would like to see a little theater group in Westport.
Mm-hmm.
And when the Bell Schoolhouse has been completely restored, hopefully we will have a usable stage area with very charming backdrops and those old asbestos curtain and so on. And this would make an ideal spot to have hometown theatricals, as it were.
Wouldn't that be fun? Wonderful. There are lots of things that can happen in the Bell School. You don't see it as a museum, do you, because of the security problem?
Well, I think that we will ultimately have some sort of a vault in the building, and I'm sure we will hope to have it protected with some sort of alarm devices,
mm-hmm.
and as secure as we possibly can make it, because I'm sure there will be things that we will want to display as in a museum.
Mm-hmm.
But my ultimate goal for the building is not primarily as a museum. I want it to be sort of an active building which will sort of continue its educational function.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What do you think, how can we present to the public, you know, as an historian, Steve Delano's, all of the farm implements and things that he's collected, the farm implements that are ancient that I found here on this ancient farm.
Right. Well, of course, I have another sort of a pipe dream. I have had a number of pipe dreams, I guess. But this one is to have the town use the present almshouse property or confirmed.
This is what I was thinking about.
For some sort of a living farm museum.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly if we were to do that, this would be an ideal spot to display old farm implements. But here again, I wouldn't want it to be just a museum situation where you would just look at inanimate objects. I would hope to have animals and people and crops and such, all in their proper perspective, as they might have been 150 years ago on that particular piece of property.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the location is an excellent one for such an endeavor, because the nearest farm museum situation would be Sturbridge Village,
mm-hmm.
I believe. And I think that if you had such a set up in Westport, you would have, we're on the way to the Cape, but
mm-hmm.
it would be very a very simple matter for persons to come off 195 to 88 and then down to that particular spot. And we would really be preserving something I think that was very valuable to Westport. Because after all, Westport, in addition to its seafaring connections, certainly one of its mainstays was farming.
Yeah.
And it's one of the last farming strongholds in the state of Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Certainly is. I'm watching this quite closely, so we can turn it over if we need to. I was wondering, there's so many good craftsmen, really good craftsmen here in Westport today, and they have to go. We tried an arts and crafts show up on 177 yesterday. People don't go up there. Our craftsmen have to go to Boston or